Like, I don't look back at it as a regret. I look back at it as a learning experience, because that's how I stay sane. That's what I think that I love about what I do in the music industry. They're going to come and have the times of their lives. We have to make it perfect. But I remember him looking down, and he was like bending down on his knees with his fingers in his ears, like, oh my God, this is Armageddon. And that's what I really love about living here in Boise, is I'm literally at the foothills of all of that access. If you really love nature, you're going to really love hunting. I will tell you that. Like, you will really love it. Hey, everybody. My name is Michael Inch, and you're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
There's a lot of people that can pull the trigger on an animal, but they don't know what to do with it after.
If you would have told me that a stupid turkey was going to make me get that excited, I'd have told you you were crazy.
It's just a skill that you have to perfect over a lot of years.
Hunting is a tribal activity. We've lost the tribe. We can't even hunt together anymore.
Well, the people that are anti-hunting are usually pro-abortion. So kill the people, save the animals.
I just remember riding my horse back to camp with the northern lights and the moose behind me, and I'm like, this is why I've done this. This is as cool as an experience as I will get.
Hi, this is Jim Shockey.
This is Sam Sohol, the public land bus guy.
Hi, I'm Kimmy Greentree.
Hi, this is South Cox with the Western Bowhunter Podcast.
Hey, this is Ben DeDamonte, a.k.a. Shed Crazy.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
All right, also getting on to today's episode, I am driving out to Bozeman, Montana for Western Hunting Summit. And I am, rather than making a, 18, 20-hour drive all in one go, I am stopping in to meet up with my good buddy Mike here in Boise, Idaho. Hanging out with him, we're talking, we're having a couple of beers. His dog, Mr. Mustache, is also hanging out, so you may hear dog crawling all over us and the microphones at some point. But Mike, I'm glad we finally.
Yeah, man. Thank you. This is it's an honor, man.
Like, I don't know. With all the times we like sat and talked and just shot the shit, I don't know why we haven't recorded a podcast yet.
It hasn't been time. Obviously, this is the time.
Apparently not. And so, the last time I was here, sitting on this couch. It was a very, very different time. A few years ago, I had just come out of the mountains in Idaho after a very, very disastrous elk hunting trip.
Man, you were hurting, dude. Like, your knees were messed up. Remember we sent you to a local hospital to get your knees checked, and they said, yeah, dude, you're done. Like, you gotta... I felt so bad for you, man, because just coming off of a hunt, and yeah, it was tough. And I was like, God, man, poor Sam.
That just feels like a completely different lifetime ago. I was talking with a few people about that on Instagram, because I just posted recently like a picture. I went on like an attempt at a hunt one time, you know, in the San Gabriel Mountains outside of LA. And I just posted up that picture, And a lot of people were like, man, I remember this. Like, they'd been following me even back then.
Yeah, man. That was one of your first hunts, though, wasn't it?
I still count that elk hunt as my very first, like, real hunt. Like, I'd sat in a tree stand once or twice prior to that. Like, I went.
But that takes it to another level when you're packing in yourself and doing it all yourself, and then the snow comes.
Well, it was like in the 70s up until then.
Right.
And then, like, I get out, and, like, the day as I'm driving out, it's like, oh, giant snowstorm. I better go to Sportsman's Warehouse and buy some stuff. You didn't quite have the gear set up I do now. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been there.
But yeah, so Mike and I know each other from work.
We produced music, a big music festival together.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. You probably never heard of it. Anything. Produce a few big music festivals together, actually.
Right. Yeah.
In various capacities. But I don't even know how we met originally. Like, I can't even remember. It just feels like I've just kind of always known you at this point.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. You know, my job at that show is everybody has to come to see me. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to come to see me. And it's one of those unique positions where I get to meet a lot of different people and connect with different people. And, you know, I've been there. This would have been my 18th year this year. And so I know a lot of people at that show. And you were a new guy to me. And everybody called you Country Sam. And I was like, I'm going to get to know Country Sam. You know, I live in Boise. Yeah. I grew up in California, but I live in Boise now. And I'm an avid outdoorsman, fisherman, upland game hunter. I got my GSP, Mr. Mustache, who Sam warned you about. But
he's just running across the room with his football right now.
It's just one of those things. Like, I'm in that lucky position that I get to pick, you know, if there's somebody that piques my interest and I want to get to know them, obviously you were one of those guys that I said, okay, I want to get to know this guy.
Well, and coming into a family like that, because it is such a family group, especially that core group that's there every year, you come in, and when you're the new guy, it's the thing, like, you're meeting 800 new people. And you're meeting like 800 new people, but all of them are just meeting like one or two.
They're meeting
new people. And it's like, so, you know, you walk in and everyone's like, hey, and especially when you got weird nickname.
Yeah.
Because they used to call me the diversity hire. Fold and Gopi used to call me the diversity hire. There's not a lot of country fans.
Oh my gosh.
And we put on the biggest country music festival.
I know.
And it's, you know, there was only a handful of country music fans. Yeah. Like, very avid country music fans, but
yep.
So that's how I got the nickname. Hired a bunch of Sams at once. It got really confusing. And
yes.
I mean, we tried everything on the team. There was like Sam versus Samuel and, you know, last names, and nothing stuck until I rolled in cowboy boots in a pearl snap one day, with a big old knife on my belt. And
you wore that knife well.
Oh my gosh. Well, and that was the thing. It turned into a character that I just built into.
Yeah, no, I totally got it too. And you lived that character, man. It was great.
Absolutely.
You got to do that. Like, you got to, that's kind of that industry, you know, you got to stand out somehow. And I give you total props for doing that. Cause you really did. It was cool.
So Mike and I know each other from a lot of different aspects. And so we have no idea where this podcast is going to end up. Of course, we're going to talk a little bit about hunting, but
of course,
I do always like to ask, and I kind of start out my podcast this way. How did you get introduced to, like, the outdoors, hunting? Because you did, and especially from your perspective, you grew up in California. You grew up in Orange County.
I did. Laguna Beach.
And there's, you know, people think SoCal, and they're like, oh, there's no hunting down there. There's actually a lot of opportunity down there.
Right.
But how did you get introduced to all of this?
You know, I'm super fortunate. My parents were school teachers, and they chose to buy. They went up to visit a friend in Ketchum, Idaho, and saw this little cabin for sale. Called on it. It was for $14,000 in West Ketchum. The rancher that owned it was from a town about 100 miles away. The rancher carried the note. So my dad put a down payment down and paid the guy $100 a month until it was paid off. But now we're down in West Ketchum, and, you know, as school teachers, my parents bought it. We're fortunate enough when you could do it. My parents bought a house in Laguna Beach, California, and they bought a house in Ketchum, Idaho in the same year. Who can do that these days?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't.
Especially school teachers.
Yeah. No, there's no way in hell, you know? You can do that. So, you know, my dad's resourceful for sort. So he would rent our house out in Laguna for the summer. And there was a Superior Court judge from LA County that would come down and rent it every summer. But that would finance our vacation to Ketchum. So I grew up fly fishing, hunting, the whole thing from the time that I don't know how old I was. Like, that's my first memories are fly fishing. I was good at it. I remember I had this technique that when I would cast and catch a fish, get the fish on, and I had this thing where I'd pull the line back and put it in my teeth and hold it and pull again and hold it in my teeth and pull. Like, that was just what worked for me at that time. I've since, you know, I don't do that anymore, but man, I grew up just loving that stuff. And also growing up a surfer, and you know, when you're a surfer, you're in nature. You are in nature more than anybody. And I don't care, you know, everybody's hunters, everybody's outdoorsmen, but surfers are actually in nature. That's what fuels our thing. I get the same joy and thrill of standing in the water and reading the currents and going, where's that fish? Where can I put my fly just perfectly so it trickles down out of the ripple into where the fish is so it thinks that it's a live bug? And I get the same joy out of that I do sitting in the lineup in the ocean going, okay, where's that next set wave coming? Where am I going to go for that? Like, I get the same, it's exact
how's it
going
to build?
Same.
When do I need to start paddling?
Yes, you know? Yeah, it's the exact same thing. And like, man, I've run into a lot of former beach people that are now mountain people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're so similar, but they're so different, but it's all about nature. You know, it's all about getting out there and experiencing it.
Well, and that's like, I mean, you know, you're talking to a person that did that. Like, you know, I actually didn't grow up surfing. For a kid that grew up in Seal Beach, you know, effectively on the beach all the time.
Yeah.
I didn't surf until well after college, but that was hunting now, especially bow hunting has taken the place of that. And especially like, surfing and hunting are two of those things to where you can be alone and quiet and still and with your thoughts, but you can't get lost because you still have to be focused and
you have to be active in the situation.
Because if you're just sitting there and you're just daydreaming on your board, you're gonna start floating in without realizing it. You're gonna get tossed by that wave.
You're gonna be right in the break zone and you're gonna get smushed and you can't have that happen.
Exactly. Same thing with hunting. You know, you're walking through the forest. You're just do daydreaming.
You can't
blow every elk or every deer, or you're gonna, you know, you're not gonna be ready with your shotgun when quails pop out of the
story,
bush.
A story I told you earlier about one of my first elk hunting trips is hiked up to 10,000 feet outside of Ketchum, and we saw them. They bedded down and just got to be midday, you know, and I'm going, okay, I'm kind of bored. I want to go out and just walk around. My biggest mistake is I didn't chamber around. You know what I mean? Like, man, how do you make that mistake? But, you know, you live and you learn. So I come up over, like, we're at this top of this ridge, and I come over just to the other side of it, and there's the entire herd just bedded down. And I don't have a round chambered. And, man, I tried to back down and, you know, got out of sight, and then I heard them just, all of them just, beep. They all just took off straight down the mountainside, and there was nothing I could do after that. But it's just one of those situations. You go, well, you know, one of the first hunting trips, you got, like, I don't look back at it as a regret. I look back at it as a learning experience because that's how I stay sane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's just I posted about this, I think, just as of, you know, the time we're recording this, like a day or two ago, I'd post a fly fishing picture, and, you know, I still haven't caught anything on a fly. And, you know, I was excited. I went out last night, and I got my first few strikes on a fly, and it was on a dry fly, which was cool, too.
Nice. It's fun to see that.
And it's, you know, the dry flies are fun because it's always, you know, it's more visually action-packed. You know, it's not as much of a black hole down there. But, you know, I posted something about, you know, if you learn to love the process and the journey rather and invest in that rather than just the end result, you're going to have a lot more fun.
A lot more fun. Absolutely.
And don't get me wrong, like, the process does get old if you never have an end result. Like, I'm not going to be one of those ones that claims, like, you know, oh, I would be happy if I never killed anything ever and I was just out hunting.
No,
I'm like, that's some bull crap right there.
I love to be able to, the reason I hunt is I love to be able to fill my freezer with stuff that I know is natural, mm-hmm. you know, stuff that I've had to work my butt off to go get. And, you know, that's the appeal to me, is how I feel myself. And I love it. I love nature is my, I don't know, it's my shrine. It's where I feel most whole. You know, when I was a kid, my dad and I used to go surfing every Sunday, and we went to this place called Churches, which was a great surf break just south of Trestles in California. And, you know, so every Sunday I'd go to Churches with my dad, but we would go out and surf together and be a part of nature and have dolphins and whales and seals and anything else that was out there come by, sharks even, come out, and, you know, you'd see them, and, you know, it's like you got to be conscious of your surroundings, just like you are when you're out hunting an elk or a deer or antelope or bighorn sheep, bear, or whatever you want.
And I'll tell you what, like, it, you know, it's amazing. Like, seeing an elk, like, you're walking through the woods, you call in an elk. Or, you know, you're walking through, you see a black bear with their cubs in the distance. Like, that's amazing. But there's also something that's almost incomparable about catching a wave, looking over into the wave, and literally seeing a dolphin. You're also reminded how big those suckers are, and if that thing decided to jump out, you'd be screwed.
They're huge.
But, like, looking over and seeing a dolphin, or just – or having a – like, paddling into a wave, and I had a buddy who had seals think his fins were – he was bodyboarding. He thought his fins were fish, and he got yanked off his bodyboard because he looked down, and there's, like, a little nip out of his thing. I mean, I've had seals come up and, like, bark at me and, like, try and climb on the board.
One time at Churches, the place I just told you about, I was out there and literally a dolphin surfaced 5 feet from me. I was so scared I fell over off my board.
Yep.
Because I was like, oh my gosh, that thing's huge. What is it? And it's still a dolphin. But when there's dolphins around, you don't got to worry about sharks, because sharks will destroy a dolphin. Dolphins will destroy a shark every day.
Well, and they'll, like, protect groups of humans. That's one of those crazy things. Yeah. Like, they will adopt surfers and, like, herd them away from sharks, which I think is cool. But, yeah, man, like, that investment in nature. And I've surfed Churches, too. I used to I'd go down there with some friends. We'd do, like, a weekend camping trip down there.
Down in San Onofre area? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, just south of – we'd go down south of San O and pack up in
– at Trails. That's the – yeah, Trails.
Yeah, we'd camp at the top, and you take it's a long walk down. So you take your board, you take all your food, and you're down there from, like, sunrise to till it's too dark to catch any more waves, and then some.
You do know there's, like, a nude beach at Trails, right? Did you guys camp at the nude beach?
No, we did not. Okay. I had no idea there was a nude beach down there.
Just saying.
Interesting. Funny enough, my buddy that I used to go surfing with down there all the time, he lives up in Coeur d'Alene.
Oh, nice.
He's the guy I typically visit when I'm coming through going to Montana, because I always go through there. But yeah, that's man, back in my 20s, those are the days.
Yeah.
We also used to do night surfing at the Huntington Beach Pier in the middle of December. Or just whenever there was a full moon, we'd meet up at Huntington Beach Pier, because there was, between the full moon and the pier, there was enough light on the water. We each had a colored LED, like, waterproof LED on the back of our wetsuit, so we could see where each other were. And it was just one of those cool things. You'd just be sitting out sitting out on your board. You couldn't quite see when the waves would be coming in.
I gotta go.
But you'd feel the back of your board rise, and you're like, oh, I guess we're going. You start paddling.
I gotta go. Yep. I've been there many times. Back in the 80s, we didn't have the LED lights, and we would just go out and surf by the moonlight. It was, you know, full moons were just the thing. If the waves were right, it couldn't be too big because you didn't want it to be too, you know, you didn't want to die out there, but...
It's really funny the looks you get from people walking the pier when they kind of look down. Like, they'll look to, like, admire the scene. Then they're like, wait. You just follow the whole thought process. They're like, wait, is there somebody down there?
Yeah.
And then you can almost count it down before they're like, are you okay?
Yes. Super true.
We had somebody offer to throw us a sweatshirt one time. I'm like, I don't think that's really going to be helpful, but thank you.
Because I'm cold?
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate the thought, but...
Yeah.
It's not going to really help.
But yeah, hunting is definitely, has very definitely kind of, because surfing is not quite as accessible as it used to be.
It's like, unless you're on the coast, you can't surf.
Yeah.
Well, now Kelly Slater has built his wave pool and.
Yeah, there's places. There's actually in, I think it's in Missoula.
That's a template that's going to be, we can actually surf here in Boise too.
In Missoula, I think it's in Missoula. It's either Missoula or Bozeman. There is a spot on the river where
yes,
you can.
Yes, yes, I've seen that. We have the same thing here in Boise, and the same guys go back and forth. And there's a little. It's fun to see a little surf culture bloom inland. Yeah. You know, my prior life was in the action sports industry, and when I first moved here, they had just opened the first wave. In Boise, and they'd originally built it for kayakers.
Okay.
And then there were so many transplanted surfers that came here that, man, like every day I went out there to surf, there were 15-1 surfers to kayakers. And it's all super cool. Everybody's super nice. You know, we make sure like you're in line and the kayaker gets in line, it's their turn. You let the kayaker go and, you know, mm-hmm. they do their thing and then they get washed out and then you jump in and you get washed out. And it's a thing. The one thing that really got me about surfing the Boise River is when you get pinned by the water, like when you fall and the water pins you to the bottom of whatever surface you're on. If you're in the ocean, the wave passes you over and you can get up.
Yeah.
When you're at a river, the wave never passes you over.
It's a universal wave.
Yeah. There was one time I was sitting on the bottom waiting for the wave to go over me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this wave's not going to go over me. I actually have to physically try to get up right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to put my legs down and force myself up just to make sure I didn't get pinned on the bottom of the river forever. So there's subtle differences, but it's generally the same.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, you know, I kind of stopped doing that as I got away from the ocean. But I've realized hunting has absolutely taken the place of what surfing used to offer me. Like you said, it's that time where you can get out of your head. You can be still and calm, but you can't get lost in your thoughts. You have to keep that focus. So honestly, like you want to cure anxiety, go surfing. You want to cure anxiety, go hunting.
Get up in the mountains. Or fishing or whatever mm-hmm. it is, as long as you're in nature. And that's my thing. I need to get outside and be in nature. That's my holy place. That's where I go to feel whole and to have my best thoughts and feel refreshed and rejuvenated when I come back. Yes, it's so I go for a weekend and I'm out there and I'm doing my thing, but I get back that Sunday evening and I feel so like just like full. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? You know that feeling of being full? Like I feel so full when I get back. It's like, gosh, man, I was out in nature and I was doing all these things and I saw these awesome things and all these rad things happen. And I was scared maybe at some point, mm-hmm. but that's always kind of the attraction, you know, it's like, yeah, I need that in my life.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal, develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping MidwayUSA.com.
I'm not sure if you had Laura Zara. She's a survivalist. She's been on Naked Afraid. I just had her on the podcast. And there's a line from that podcast that I just love. She's like, the more – it was something along the lines of – I'm probably going to butcher it. The more close calls I have with death, the more alive I feel.
Right. And the more you try to crave those close calls because they keep you alive. And that's what I think that I love about what I do in the music industry is – man, we have a finite amount of time to build something, to build a show for 130,000 people that they're going to come and have the times of their lives. We have to make it perfect. So we have, you know, and it's never from our side, as you know, it never goes perfectly because there's so many different moving parts. And I love the points where it's like, all hands on deck, like whoever it is, like you got to come out right now and help us do whatever we need to do because we need help to make this show happen.
One of my favorite points is like right before gates open and literally everyone is like sprinting across the field.
Yeah.
You know, everything's falling apart. Signs aren't up, you know, things aren't hooked up, but these gates are about to open and, you know, a few hundred thousand people or, you know, 50,000 people are going to come tearing in through these gates. And honestly, they're not going to give a crap if the set list on one tent isn't
perfect
posted on all four sides. Like, you know, it's just,
it's true. It's super true. But that's kind of the thrill of it that, you know, that's the thrill that I need in my life. That's why, you know, I live here in Boise and I have ultimate wilderness at my beck and call. You know, I go, my favorite upland game hunting spot is a half an hour from my house. I can literally leave here where we're sitting on this couch and in a half an hour be bird hunting with my dog. Like, that doesn't suck, man.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't suck. It's fun. It's why I got my guy, because he's an ultimate hunter, and fills my soul, man. Fills my soul.
Yeah, and last time I was here, he was just starting out. He's still a pup, but he is for sure. But yeah, it was like he was fresh off the line when I came back. You had just got him, and he's been a fixture, of course, at the festivals ever since. He's a bit of a mascot, but he is
it's kind of my role there, though, too, you know? People like to, like, my office is open for everybody to come in and sit down, and that's one of the big things that I do is...
It's the safest place on the festival site, too.
Yeah, safety meetings are a big thing, and it's a real thing, and, you know, like, come out, pet a dog... You know, have them lick you on the face when your whole world's crumbling at the show and and you got to come to like talk to somebody. I'm, you know, fortunately, it's kind of the role I've built. I'm that guy you come and talk to, and I cherish it. You know, I enjoy helping people, and that's why I love doing what I do, because I get to provide so much joy for so many people every year, you know, hundreds of thousands of people every year. I get to have, you know, they get to leave their everyday life, whatever they're going through, and go listen to some of their favorite bands and have a good time and not think about their daily life, you know, and that's my juice, man. And that's why I've been fortunate enough to do this for the past 20 years. And I feel blessed to have been able to do it, you know? Yeah, it's just been a good ride. You know, we'll see after all this stuff, COVID and everything else that's going on in the world, like where we end up. But, man, I still feel blessed. And I'm still, you know, trying to do stuff now, even though we're in COVID. And I realize the need for people to gather as humans.
Yeah.
And there's people can't gather as humans right now. And it's affecting a lot of people. And I don't, you know, I'm one of those people that's going to be like, hey, look, we're going to get you all back together. We're going to do this soon. You know, it's just, we got to follow, you know, proper protocol, proper safety measures, and we're going to do it soon. I have no doubt about that.
So speaking of the upland game hunting though,
yes,
we've been talking about this and I'm like the worst person because you and I've got a couple other buddies who have like given me open invites for various, like, I've got my buddy Andy has basically given me an open invite for hog hunting down in like the Sonoma area. And
nice.
You've effectively given me an open invite for upland game hunting anytime. I mean, for a couple of years now. And it's just this year. This year has got to be. It's got to happen. Like,
hey, I'm not doing anything else.
Yeah,
you know, I got one festival in September, but it's actually the weekend that bird hunting season opens this year.
Oh, it's on opener.
Yeah,
of course.
It's, you know, like you got to give up some things to do other things, and
well, and you know, you got to be able to pay for the ammo somehow and the tags.
Yep.
But, you know what? Yeah. And this is my first year not working a full-time job. And you know, I started up, quit my full-time job. And so this year is like my first time where I can effectively work from anywhere, you know, and I can take the time if I need to and dump a bunch of stuff on my employees who are probably listening to this right now, shaking their heads. Guess what, guys? Suck.
Hey, that's the benefits of being the boss.
Absolutely. What's saying? Shit rolls downhill.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. I don't know you, but I feel for you.
Yeah, Mike's worked with me a while. He knows how difficult I am.
No, you've always been easy.
Hey.
Whoa.
You weren't supposed to tell people about that. But yeah, man, I gotta come out because I've my upland game hunting experience so far, the extent of my upland game hunting, not counting turkey, which...
Okay, right. Don't really consider turkey upland game.
And that's
but.
The thing. It's like, quote-unquote, yes, technically they are.
Right.
But, like, when somebody says upland game hunting, you're not... I don't technically think turkey. That turkey hunting turkey.
You're thinking about chucker, pheasant, quail, mm-hmm. Hungarian partridge.
Those exactly.
One thing I want to get into this year is... what are the cranes?
Sandhill cranes.
The ribeye of the sky.
The ribeye of the sky, yeah.
The ribeye of the sky. That's something that I'd, because I know we have them come through here, and that's something I really want to pursue because they look tasty.
And that's like Randy Newberg's thing, isn't it? The ribeye of the sky. I think it's Randy Newberg that always talks. I know he's big into grouse, too. He'll derail an entire elk hunt if he sees a single grouse.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, which that's fun. I take that back. Like, I have hunted some grouse, but it's been always been on a hunt. And it's been like a target of opportunity kind of a thing.
Right.
When I was in Colorado elk hunting with my buddy Kelvin, we hammered some grouse. We were taking a couple of grouse a day and eating them that night. We were
grouse are like
good.
And I'm sure, I mean, I know they've changed them up. There's like a dusky grouse and a blue grouse now. When I was growing up and, you know, going on camping trips with my family, my dad would walk by and we're going on a 6-mile hike up to, you know, above timberline to go to this high mountain lake to go fishing and camp out and do a family thing. My dad would see a blue grouse and just go, boom. You know, he carried a little .22 revolver.
Yep.
Didn't need anything more than that. Just, okay, there's a blue grouse. Bink! With his .22 revolver.
Oh,
and
yeah.
With birdshot in it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we would, we'd have that for dinner, plus the trout we caught at the High Mountain Lake. And it was good times, man.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, like, it was good times.
We were putting together, it, you know, and the grouse are so, depending on the grouse, I should say, and where they're at, but... The ones we were running into were the dumbest birds I'd ever seen.
They're not smart.
What was he saying? He was saying, like, I guess the saying about grouse was you have 5 grouse each above each other on a branch in a tree. If you shoot from the bottom up – or if you shoot from the top down, you'll get one. If you shoot from the bottom up, you'll get every single one. But, like, I remember I shot one. There was, like – there's a whole bunch of them, and I had my bow. It was we were all just using judo tips. We didn't have rifles with us. Hammered one with my bow, and it was I didn't want to use one of my broadheads because there's a bunch more, and you know, I think we could have like two or three.
Broadhead would take too much meat out, anyways.
Yeah, and it would just—I mean, it was just overkill. I mean, half of the time they end up—they keep going because it's so sharp, it doesn't stun them at all. But I didn't want to use one of my broadheads. I'm like, oh, I'll just take the one grass, whatever. And so I shot one off a log. The other one sat there. One flew off. The other one sat there and like looked down at the other one, like George, what happened, George? What are you doing down there? And so I'm like, okay, hey, that was when I was bumming. I didn't have another judo tip. So I start walking up to go get my arrow, and it's just still sitting there. And I get closer, and it's just still sitting there. And I'm like 5 feet away at this point. I'm like determining it. I'm like looking around for a big rock or something. Or I'm like, do I try and tackle it and just wring its neck? And finally it flew off. But I'm like, these are the dumbest birds I've seen in my life, and they are tasty as hell.
Yes.
We'd breast them out. We cut up the breast. We fried them up. I had like a little salt shaker with some different spices. Put that in, and then we did like a Mountain House chicken and rice.
Nice.
And an Idaho and mashed potatoes, and mixed it all together, and it was like this casserole. Oh my! Like, I'm drooling thinking about it right now.
I'm hungry right now too. That sounds delicious. I'm part of the when I turned. I think I was 40, probably 40. So my dad's been part of this group of guys that hunt sage grouse every year.
Okay.
This year, it's every opening day. It'll be in September. It'll be like their 58th year getting together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like it's an old school thing. And there's cowboys. We have state senators. We have attorneys, doctors, everybody in between. Bus drivers, the whole deal. They all, you know, but they're all old school friends. I got invited when I turned 40. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to the hunt. This is the thing. When I was a kid, my dad would take off every September, October for a weekend to go spend time with these guys. When I got invited, it was just like, oh my gosh. And it's, yeah, a lot of them don't hunt sage grouse anymore, but there are a few of us that are still like, yeah, we're into it. We're going to get some birds. And, it's just a fun weekend where we all come together, play a lot of cribbage, drink way too much alcohol, build way too big of a bonfire, and, you know, like, they just share stories. And I feel very fortunate to be able to sit there and hear their stories of what they've done and who they are. And, you know, it's just a special time. There was one year, it was one of the first years, that I went out with the ultimate hunters, the Bushes. Gary Bush, the dad, was a sniper in Vietnam, and used to, like, his commander used to say, just go do your thing, and he'd go out and come do his thing. He came back and was just the ultimate hunter, and his son lives up in Montana and is the ultimate hunter guy, you know, like bow hunter, everything. And many times he can't come to the hunt because he's still hasn't filled his elk tag, his archery elk tag. But when he does, I watch what he does. I try to learn because this guy's way better than I am. And I'm trying to, you know, I don't want to necessarily be at his level, but how can I learn from this dude? Cause he is like, he is the dude, you know, like his life revolves around it, and it's pretty fucking rad.
You're not necessarily going to be able to commit the same amount of time he does to learning that, but there's always something you can improve on every time you talk to him. And
absolutely.
Every time, you know?
Or just by observing him, going out and watching just how he does. And man, they're hard chargers. They walk hard and fast. And so what do I do now? I walk hard and fast, and I got my dog, you know?
Yeah.
Circling around me too, but we cover a lot of ground now, so it's, you know, you learn some things along the way.
You know, I went to my first ever deer camp this last year out in Missouri. A buddy of mine from the POMO organization invited me out, and it was awesome. It's just outside of the Ozarks, you know, just hanging out, coming back, and like sitting around having dinner, sitting around the campfire, talking with these guys. And, you know, there's a huge variety of guys of all different backgrounds. And, you know, I did one of my favorite podcasts. It was just like campfire hunting stories from guys that have,
that's amazing,
like storied history in hunting, like, you know, the guys they knew. And, I want to develop something like that in my life, like a group of guys and something, you know, whether it's hunting camp or, you know, an upland game thing where everyone gets together, right, whatever it is, but just something every year that's the tradition, and it's the community and building that. And like, I want to build something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I want to get there someday.
Well, here's the thing. My whole deal with this hunt group is there's only – I'm like the second youngest guy there, and I'm 50. And I want to, you know, make this be a thing. I don't want this thing to die when – because all these guys now that come out every year, they're all in their 70s and 80s. And I don't want to see this tradition go away, and I've – kind of dropped some hints over the years to like the ringleaders who kind of organize the thing every year of like, hey, we kind of need some new blood in here. Like, can I bring some qualified folks that aren't going to mess up the camaraderie and the, you know, like that aren't going to be jerks. And
they may not be the best shooters, but at least they're not, you
they're,
know, it's,
there's, it's something
they're
to
better
keep
people.
This, yeah. Keep this tradition going, because it's a super special thing, and I know there's plenty of hunt groups out there around the world, around the country that do similar things, but like 58 years, man, like that's a lot of time for all these guys
to
get together every year. And yeah, we do it, and it's we get together on Friday and play the Mackey golf course. And it's 9-hole course, and we break up into teams, and there's betting going on, and you know, it's like a definite, like, yeah, we won, and you get like $20, and you're like, yeah, I got your $20, and you hold it over them the whole weekend, and that sort of stuff.
And then you probably end up buying them a beer with that $20 later, but
well, yeah, no, it's you know, there's it's all just good fun and camaraderie and just good times, you know.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
So, I do want to take it a little bit back to the music industry here.
Okay.
Another mutual connection of ours who has gone on a hunt with you. And I just love this story because the two of you tell it so differently.
Yep.
And I think you know where I'm going. Exactly.
I do. I know exactly where you're going with
it. And I'll have to shoot him a text and let him know he has to listen to this podcast. But he was my former boss. He was the guy that hired me.
Yeah.
But went on a chucker hunt with you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Upland game hunt, because there's huns and quail and chucker in the same area, and we just happened to come upon some chucker.
So as he tells it, you guys were out walking, and then just out of nowhere, you were shooting like straight at him, and it was this horrifying experience.
Well, that's, you know, you get a city kid, and just, you know, he and Samson and Leo all drove up in 2011.
And I will give Gopi credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
He is one of the most open people to conversations and experiences than anyone I know.
It wasn't absolutely.
And he's like a full-on city guy.
Yep. I give him full credit for coming out and living on the farm. I was living on a farm that time. And we went out chucker hunting. They came up in October, and it was chucker hunting season. I was like, all right, let's go. So we went out, walked around for a while, and Samson and Leo are behind us a ways, and Gopi's keeping up with me. I didn't have a dog at that point, but what I would do is just find the water holes and just make big circles around them. You know, I kind of still do that, but now I have a dog to cover more territory.
Yeah.
So we came upon some chucker, and he was literally right next to me. He was not in front of me. And it might have sounded like it because, you're not used – you're a city kid, not used to hearing the loud shotgun blasts. And, you know, the birds flush, and I'm right there with the gun and start shooting. And he's going, oh, my God, what's going on? And, you know, Gopi's voice, too. You know, everybody mocks Gopi's voice, but it's, you know, it's Gopi's voice. That's how he sounds. But, yeah, he made a riot about that, thought I was trying to kill him. And I was like, dude, you were next to me. You were nowhere in front of me, man. You know, I would not have shot if you were in front of me. But I remember him like looking down, and he was like bending down on his knees with his fingers in his ears, like, oh my God, this is Armageddon. And I was just like, okay, dude, it's not that bad, man.
Oh man. Yeah, he tells it like he was in front of you, and you were just like, bah, 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 right over his head, like, kind of
no.
a thing.
No. You know, I'm smart enough not to do that stuff. You know, like, we're out trying to hunt, but we're not trying to kill anybody. And that's number one priority, is being safe.
Yeah.
Know? So we're not about that, but it's... I could see how a city kid coming out for the first time hearing a gunshot blast right next to his ears going, oh my God, you're trying to kill me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely, though, this year has to be. So this year, I'm determined. I'm definitely doing waterfowl this year.
Cool.
I'm like, without a doubt, 100%, if it kills me.
I've been looking into aluminum boats. I have a 9-horsepower motor right in my garage, and I've been looking into aluminum boats just to do waterfowl.
Dude,
and
just Craigslist. And they come this up dude, randomly.
And I know this dude. They're so much cheaper in California. Like, when I'm in California for the show, I just check Craigslist, and they have like 12-foot aluminum boats with the motor and a trailer for like $800.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Up here,
because people can't store them, especially like in the SoCal area.
Yeah, yeah.
People like have to move there, and they're like, "What the hell am I going to do with this big ass aluminum boat and trailer?"
Yeah. Up here, they go for much more. But
yeah, well, it's supply and demand too.
Yeah,
you don't have as much demand down there.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Well, if you see one, let me know. I'll drive it out to you.
Yeah. Deal.
But yeah, waterfowl this year, upland game.
Yep.
This year, I also am going to, I'm probably going to do something. I'm going to go somewhere and just either pick up like a leftover cow tag from somewhere, or pick up like, you know, go out to Texas or something, pick up some doe tags or something where I can just
go out,
clear some
there.
Stuff down and really fill the freezer.
So well, then, let me know, you know. Yeah, I want to do that. I'm going to have time this year. There's no festivals.
Yep.
So, you know, take advantage of it.
That is certainly the goal this year. So we will have to definitely do some upland game.
Yep. Or even like I said, I want to check out the Sandhill Crane stuff and see.
Those see, I think like, you have to apply for though, don't you?
I do, but I don't think it's really difficult. At least here in Idaho, I've looked into it and it's like a tag.
Yeah. Okay.
And I might be wrong on that, but that's my recollection.
I'm sure it's different. Each state, you know, each state will be different, whether it's an endorsement, just a tag or the counter tag or a draw tag. But yeah, man, I don't know. Coming back hunting Idaho again.
It's hey, you gotta get that bitter taste out of your mouth, man.
Yeah.
Like Idaho's, you know, this state has 75% of Idaho is open wilderness land, public access. It's got the most public access to the lower 48, you know, and that's what I really love about living here in Boise is I'm literally at the foothills of all of that access, you know, and I take full advantage. 2 weeks ago, I have two roommates living with me now that are living and working with me that are out of work, festival workers. So I took them up to about 7,500 feet east of Ketchum. And as we're driving up, there's all these antelope, like early in this, like early, like way up high, I'm going, aren't you guys supposed to be still down low?
Yeah.
You know, like what's going on here? Anyways, they say, do you think your dog would chase an antelope? And I said, yeah, absolutely chase one, but there's no way in hell he's going to catch one. You know, they're second fastest animal on earth besides the cheetah. I kid you not. The next morning, I wake up early. These guys are still in the tents. I stoke the fire, get the coffee going. And dog did his thing, and he's sitting there laying right next to me. I'm sitting in a chair drinking my coffee. And 30 yards from us, a mom and a juvenile antelope. So it wasn't a baby. It could still go. But literally, they came, you know, trotting in front of us 30 yards out. My dog looks at me and goes, can I? And I said, go get him, you know, go get him. So he took off. He kind of cuts the angle on him, you know? So he ends up literally like 3 feet behind him. And my dog's fast. He's a GSP, and he's a big GSP. Like, he's a big boy. And, man, once he got right behind him, like, they took off. They put the afterburners on, man, and it was like nothing. I'm sitting there, yelling, screaming, going, oh, my gosh, look at this.
Yeah.
Because these guys are still sleeping, and I'm seeing what they just talked about the day prior.
Yeah.
Like, in lot. You know what I mean? Like, where do you get that? You know, we went up and I just sat there and I brought my Nox and I was just glassing the mountainsides, you know, just as for fun, you know, just what's up there. There's got to be goats and bighorn sheep and, you could hear their rocks falling into the night.
Well, dude, one of the best things I ever bought was it's one of those tripod adapters.
Mm-hmm.
So you can throw a pair of binos or a spotting scope and just, you know, for initial glassing, like if you're on a hunting trip, but even like on a camping trip to go check stuff out, you know, you're driving and you have a little pull off and you see a herd of elk or antelope or bighorn sheep up on a ridge or whatever it is. You can just sit there and admire them. And it's like, it's so nice and easy. You just keep that thing in your like center console and you can strap whatever onto it.
That's amazing, man.
Dude. And it's like, I love those things. One of the best purchases I ever made, but,
That's when the weather turns good here in Idaho. It's been rainy for most of the spring. We got that one weekend we went out. We got the one weekend that it was, I didn't have to wear anything more than a hoodie when we were up at 7,500 foot and there's snow all around us. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a magical thing. Last couple weekends have been, if had we been up there, we'd be probably in a couple feet of snow right now.
Yeah.
You know, so once the weather turns good, like, that's my whole thing. Now that I'm not traveling, hey, man, I'm getting out in nature and I'm going to go. I'm taking my dog every Saturday or Sunday. I take him for a long hike and I go explore new territory, new chucker hunting territory. And I found some amazing water holes that I'm going to go back to during season. So I can, when it gets dry, they need water. They're going to be somewhere around there. So let's, make time of where we are, what we're doing.
Absolutely. All right. So as we're kind of winding things down here, somebody comes up to you, they know you hunt. Maybe it's somebody from the music industry. You're at a festival, you're renting someone a cart and they're like, hey man, I hear you're super into that hunting stuff. Like, that always sounded so cool, but I got no background in it. I've never done any of this stuff before. There's like a ton of stuff I got to learn. I don't know if I can do something like that. What would you tell that person?
Oh, what would I tell them? It would depend on who the person would be. If they're a close enough friend, I'd say, come on up, come on up and let's just go do it. That's the only way you're going to get into it is just go do it. Get rid of your inhibitions. Do some research, obviously, research where you're going to go, what you're going to do, who you're going to, what you're hunting, all that sort of stuff. And just go out and do it. That's like when I moved up here full time in 2006, I wasn't the most accomplished hunter. I wasn't, I was a fisherman because I grew up fly fishing, but I didn't have that acumen as a skilled hunter. And man, since 2006, all I did was, I had guns, I'm going to go do this. And I went out and did it. And through trial and error, I've gotten better and better and better. I still have a shit ton to learn, but every season I get to be a better and better hunter. And I think that's the advice I would give is just go do it, just go do it. That's the only way you're really going to learn. Don't rely on other people to bring you out. Don't rely on like getting the best spot or knowing the best spots. Go out and explore your best spots. Go get out in nature and do it. Mm-hmm. Like if you really love nature, you're going to really love hunting. I will tell you that. Like, you will really love it. So, that's all I can say to somebody. Just go do it.
All right. Folks wanted to find you online and follow along with you and Stash.
Geez, Mr. Mustache has an Instagram. It's Mr. Mustache 04202017, because that was his birthday.
Okay.
So, and Mr. Mustache was already taken on Instagram. But, yeah, no, we do a little thing there. It's not, I don't update it often, but now I might.
There you go.
You know, and it's all about him and his festival world, and also him and his element of hunting birds.
There we go.
So it's a nice, you know, there's two things to it. It's funny that people, you know, from our world, not a lot of hunters, you know?
Well, let's just say...
there's a few.
The company we worked for runs a vegan beer and food festival.
Yeah.
So there can often be a very anti-sentiment.
Yeah.
At times.
But, you know, I never ever feel any negativity about that. You know what I mean? Like, I never have felt that negativity. It's all about, all right, that's what you like. This is what I like. Like, good for you. And I say, good for you. You know, that's the kind of sentiment that why I love that company so much is that's the sentiment we get. You know, I never, ever, I mean, you were in the office obviously more than I am, but I never have had anybody say, oh my gosh, you're a hunter. I don't like you. I'd be like, all right, sorry.
It was never quite that, but there was the occasional comment in meetings.
I'm sure.
Oh, probably have to go kill a mama bear and her cubs. I believe was the phrase that was used.
But it's like, no. You know, people don't understand.
My response was,
we're not bloodthirsty killers.
My response was, no, the daddy bears actually take care of that. I don't do that.
Yeah, and that's true.
Yeah. also, you have a podcast coming out.
I do.
If you want to give just a quick announcement. I don't think the stuff's up yet, but it will be soon.
It's going to be called The Safety Meeting with Inch. My name is Michael Inch. Everybody knows there's so many Michaels that I go by my last name, Inch. It's E-N-S-C-H. It'll be on all the networks and
all the places.
And it's going to be about music festival production. That was my original thought. But now that we're in this whole time when the industry is not going to come back for a while, it's going to be what people are doing to usher this back in a safe way. Like, how can we all come together as a group, as a community? Because it really is a community, this festival community. How we can bring it all back together and fast track it best we can. Being safe, being conscious, taking all the protocols. Like, what's that going to look like? So it'll be exciting. It'll be something that I've wanted to do for a long time and just had the opportunity to do another podcast at a studio here in Boise and said, hey, got this thing that I've been working on or had seven interviews in the can, and they said, yeah, we'll just partner 50-50 with you. And I said, done deal.
There we go.
So, you know, we'll see where that goes, but it's still in the infant stages, and I'm excited about it. So something I'm going to do.
So check out The Safety Meeting with Inch. If you don't know what The Safety Meeting is, you'll just have to figure that out. That one's for those in the know. But Mike, dude, it was fun. Glad you were able to finally hop on.
Thank you for having me, man. I feel super honored. I've been, you know, admittedly, I haven't listened to enough of your podcasts as I should have, but I've always followed what you're doing, and I always had great admiration for it, of taking that step and doing it. And pretty cool, man.
Thank you, man.
Pretty cool.
All right, y'all, that'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure to check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. That'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this podcast inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher, and head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
So while it's fun to go like just full-blown redneck on these fish. This is like high-tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun. Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.